Killer Innovations Podcast for Monday, October 24th, 2005, show number 33, brought to you from London, England. Hello, and welcome to the Killer Innovations Podcast. I'm your host, Bill McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. While I'm in London, I get to fly to Amsterdam today and then back to the U.S. Later this week with a quick stop in Bonn, Germany. Saturday, I had an opportunity to meet with Darren and Christopher, two listeners of the podcast living here in the U.K., we got started a little bit after 1 o'clock, and then walked down the street to grab lunch. And before you knew it, we'd been talking for more than 4 hours. It's a great opportunity for me to meet with some of the listeners and also like-minded people around creativity and innovation. So really appreciate that opportunity. Today, went out to the London Design Museum. Great museum if you get a chance. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, know that I'm a big fan of the London Design Museum, just as a way to kind of see what's going on in other parts of the world. Thanks for the email and voicemail feedback. I have one voicemail comment this week from South Africa. This feedback points out the weak signals and innovations coming out of the region. I'll play it at the end, so stay through to the end and get a regional update of South Africa. And that brings to mind here, I'm going to put out another homework assignment. So this is this week's homework assignment. Put together either an MP3 audio or leave me a voicemail message on the weak signals and innovations coming from your part of the world. Get it to me somehow. If you're going to send it to me by email, if you could send it to me as a link rather than attaching the MP3 files, because otherwise my mailbox will get crushed. But if you have to, go ahead and send it. Just keep it short, something in like the 3 to 5 minute range. Then I'll play it as I get them on upcoming podcasts. I think it'll be a good way to share with all the listeners kind of the innovations and weak signals that are coming out in different parts of the world. Keep in mind that you can reach me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can always leave me a feedback message at 703-636-4460, or always Skype me at phil_mckinney. Next week, I'm in the U.S., I'm Houston and San Francisco. I've gotten a couple of comments via email, and there's been some discussions, I shouldn't say discussions, but questions on what can be posted or what cannot be posted in the KI community site with regards to content from the podcast. And I just want to clarify that all of the content in the podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons license requiring attribution, non-commercial use. So you can publish it, share it, as long as you note that it is licensed as a attribution, meaning to give credit back to the original creator of that content, in this case of the podcast, myself, and non-commercial, meaning you can't use it to generate income for yourselves. If you would like to use the material in other ways, just drop me an email. We can chat about it, and we'll work something out. But I just find that using the Creative Commons license is the best way to make the information as freely available as possible while not getting myself into any hot water with my current employer on commercial income from the content. So, also, a number of listeners have requested or suggested that I time code the podcast so that way people will know how to jump right to segment 2 or segment 3, the killer question in each of the podcasts. And it just was pretty onerous for me to sit down and try to do the time coding after I've put in 2 or 3 hours in production and engineering of each podcast show. So I've been unable to get back to getting that done. Well, it looks like Daryl, one of the listeners, has gone ahead and done that. So if you are looking for the time codes for previous shows so that you know where to jump to listen to re-listen to the killer question, go out to the KI community site. If you don't know how to get there, go to killerinnovations.com and click on the KI community button in the upper right-hand corner. And that way, then you'll be able to see the list. Now, Daryl hasn't done them all. I think he started May, June, July, something in that kind of time frame. So, for those of you who may have done it yourselves in earlier podcasts, go ahead and update that list and see if we can't generate an entire list of all the shows and the appropriate time codes. Moving on to segment one, innovation timing. As the old axiom goes, timing is everything. Those of us in the field of designing and producing new concepts and new products always have two fears. One is moving too early, meaning you pave the way for your competitors, meaning you go in and launch a new product or launch a new capability, and all of a sudden, you've done all the education of the marketplace, and the number two and number three are able to leverage that to their advantage. At the same time, you move too late, and the market is already flooded with providers, and therefore you're one of many. And in that case, you actually feed into the commoditization because the only thing you can compete on is price when you are a late entrant into the offering. So the objective here really is to move at just the right timing. And when you're commercializing or getting ready to launch a killer innovation, the objective here is to catch the wave, a wave of enthusiasm, of excitement, of recognition of the uniqueness of what you've built, and therefore then have that wave carry you beyond anything you could have even imagined or even done yourself. Good examples would be Google. I mean, if you saw last week, Google's total market cap actually exceeded $100 billion there for a brief moment in time during stock trading. eBay, even Microsoft. If you think about the early days of Microsoft and where it is today, it would have been harder to predict. But again, timing worked out where the market enthusiasm, providing something that was uniquely needed, and the availability of all the other component pieces coming together. So, what are different ways that you can measure timing? How do you know when the timing is going to be correct? Well, there are four that I use when I'm looking at when to release products or technologies to the market. One is what I call critical price. And critical price is that there's a certain cost in order to manufacture the item, and then there's a critical price at which adoption and acceptance will take off. One that is commonly referenced in a lot of MBA courses is the whole issue around fax machines. For many, many years, fax machines were incredibly expensive. Back in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, fax machines would cost literally $2,000 to $3,000, and therefore was limited to a very small set of businesses. However, once there was enough cheap components and that a fax machine could be produced and sold that was less than $400 or $500, the market for fax machines literally exploded overnight and then enjoyed a wide market adoption through the later part of the 80s going into the early 90s. A second example for critical price is the aged drugs. The aged drugs now are coming down in price and making those available to the emerging markets such as Africa to a level that would never have been able to obtain until that price point got met. The second critical timing is critical mass. Now, this one is somewhat tied to price, meaning that if I can hit a price point and drive acceptance, once I hit that price point, then the takeoff for that and therefore the critical mass. Now, each technology or each product or service has what's called a critical mass, a certain percentage of market adoption where the success will then naturally feed on itself. One example is the hybrid cars. The objective for the hybrid cars is to grab 2% of total automobile purchases because it's felt in the automotive industry that at 2%, Word of mouth marketing will take over for unique advantages that any given product or car will have. And so the objective for the hybrid cars is to get above 2% market adoption. Now, in some cases, that critical mass may be 10% of the market. It may be 30% of the market for certain products or services. Whatever that critical mass is, tracking competitors or tracking your own products up to that crossover line and critical mass then becomes important. And also, again, you need to recognize that critical price has the ability to influence critical mass for the takeoff of a new idea. Third is displacement. And displacement means is that you've introduced a killer innovation that is going to replace some older technology or some older approach. So in this case, measuring the uptake of the new idea and measure the decline in the old approach or the old product. Basically, the idea behind displacement is you're measuring one that is going up and others that are coming down as far as market share. The one example would be the DVD VCR. So the DVD is taking off, the VCR is declining, and at some point you're going to see them cross over, and that becomes that displacement point. Your ability to predict when that displacement occurs and basically signaling broad market adoption for a given technology becomes critical on timing and also critical on what price points you need to hit, given that you're replacing a current item at a current price. Another example is the Microsoft browser. Now, in that case, Microsoft basically gave it to went to a price of zero, and therefore was able to displace the Netscape browser during the browser wars. The fourth measuring of time is what I call zero pricing or zero component pricing. And let's face it, at some point, everything becomes a commodity over time. Now, the key here is looking at commodity pricing potentially for component parts that will allow you then to get to a critical price. So this is kind of looking up the supply chain and looking for those component pieces that could potentially go or that are leading towards a zero commodity price that you can then leverage. One would be storage, you know. Now, storage is not quite getting to zero, but it's getting pretty darn cheap. And that's what enabled Google to launch Gmail, where they could basically give away 1 gig free, and now they're giving up to 2 gig free to users. The other is Wi-Fi chipsets. The Wi-Fi chipsets now are becoming so inexpensive that Wi-Fi now is available literally in any computing platform that you can purchase. Third is international calls. International calls are becoming so cheap now that there's a whole variety of new kinds of communication services or even call center outsourcing to India and other parts of the world because the ability for me or the cost for me to transfer that call from the US to India and have a representative there in order to support those calls, the barrier is no longer there from the standpoint of being an expense barrier such as international calling. Well, let's walk through a really quick case study, and I'm going to talk about digital cameras. If you go back and you look at digital cameras and you look at all of the timings, you know, hindsight's 2020, but were clearly the timings working to the advantage of the players who could figure out how to really take advantage. One was critical price, and what you quickly figured out when you start looking at the trend lines was is that the first cameras that were going to break under $400 were going to ignite really a broad purchase of items. Now, many in the consumer electronics field looked at that $400 to $500 price band and what they call spousal pricing, meaning that you can go in, you can look at that item, you know, for most middle income or higher, you know, individuals, and look at an item, and if it falls between that $400 and $500 price point, then you can typically go ahead and purchase that. It's a single person purchase decision. Once you get north of $500, $600, then it falls into what we call spousal pricing, meaning that if you're married or you have a significant other, you're going to need to check with them before you're going to shell out into those dollar ranges. So, in the case of digital cameras, the critical price was that $400 breakpoint, which just ignited broad demand, broad purchasing for the new digital cameras. The other was critical mass. And the critical mass for the digital cameras is once it broke 25% market share for cameras. And what it did was is then it ignited a whole variety of support services, such as print at home or new online print services. The third timing for digital cameras was displacement. In this case, it was 50 million. Once the digital cameras hit that 50 million, that was the crossover point for the traditional film cameras. And you saw literally film cameras plummet at that point once that crossover occurred. And then fourth was the zero component or zero commodity pricing. And what drove the digital cameras was really the pricing for what's called the CCD elements. It's the electronics that actually does the capturing of the image coming through the lens. And once that got less than $15, that became such a low commodity price that you literally saw CCD elements going into digital cameras and in even to phones. And that really would broke out the whole concept of camera phones. And today, camera phones actually outsell digital cameras. Nokia is quite proud by the fact that they are the largest digital camera manufacturer in the world, and they're not in the camera business. So keep in mind that when you're looking to commercialize your idea or to look to exploit a timing opportunity, map out the critical pricing timing for your particular killer innovation, the critical mass. What market share do you need to hit in order to really drive a natural adoption, meaning a self-feeding kind of reinforcing market? Third is displacement tipping point. At what point do you hit market share displacement for a previous technology, and therefore you'll see a significant increase in the market adoption? And fourth, look for that zero price element. What is the component pieces that are going to zero pricing that will help you feed the previous three timings? Segment two, weak signals. As longtime listeners know, my original major in college was architecture, so visual design has always been an important component. I carry sketchbooks with me and doodle, and actually had either the enjoyment or the absolute terror of having designed and built my house, one of my houses, and not sure I want to go through that experience again. But I want to talk about in this week's weak signal about design. Design's not a new weak signal, but things like the iPod have reinforced the role of design in the success of a product or technology. Well, one area that I think is catching on, it's today I would still consider it somewhat of a weak signal, is what I would call the immersive experience as part of the brand. So this is the design of flagship stores. Recently, I was reading about the O2, which is a mobile operator based in headquartered in the UK, but with significant operations in Germany. And O2 opened up a new flagship store in Germany. Now, it was designed by Dan Perlman. Dan is fairly well known in the design circles. He's done work for BMW and others. Now, the key, or I should say the key, but one of the more interesting components of the O2 flagship store is a powerful media experience. The focal point is this, what I would call media band, which literally begins outside the store and travels across the ceiling and across the floor, going over the top of furniture until they meet at the back wall. Now, the content that gets displayed on these media bands, the floor and the ceiling, is based on the season. So in the winter, if you were to step on the band on the floor, you would see cracking and splinters appear on its surface of projected ice. So as if you were stepping on a lake frozen, and you would hear the sounds and you would see the cracking and slivers of ice breaking up underneath you. The band takes you to a table where it projects images and actually has the different mobile phone devices that O2 makes available. And if you reached down, you touched the product, then literally it projects the information about that device, its features, color options, price, service contracts, etc. And then out in front of the store, it displays literally the top 10 products that are scrolling by, and you can literally reach out as if you were touching it. It stops the literally scrolling of the top 10 products that O2 makes available and displays the information. A very interactive, very kind of an immersive shopping experience, given that you're going into O2 to buy technology, a very technology-rich kind of an experience. Back in the mid-90s, I was asked by some owners of significant shopping malls in the U.S. to take a look at a prototype store that they had built in Washington, D.C. It was actually in an old armory, and they literally had built a complete store in the middle of this absolutely humongous armory. And it had things like on the front window, what we call pixelized glass. You may have seen this quite often, where they literally are projecting digital or moving images onto the back of glass. And it's a way to project an image through the back of clear glass, and then have the front of the glass literally act as the screen. Rumor has it that technology was actually developed for Bill Gates to use in his home, so that he could project images of artwork in his house. And supposedly, you put a tag on when you get to Bill's house, and as you walk around, artwork that you like and music that you like literally follow you around the house. So in this case, this store in Washington, D.C. had pixelized glass. You had early tablets, computers that you would carry around, and as you got to display areas, as you were looking at the display, the information was literally downloaded onto this tablet so that you could change the color. So you saw the item on a rack, or you saw the item on a mannequin. That information was displayed on the tablet, and you could literally click it and see what that would look like in different colors. Then you could literally check it off that you wanted to buy it, and you could walk around the store. If you were a new shopper, you would put in your information, such as sizes, and it would track, for instance, the previous purchases, and it would tell you whether or not this new item would match. So if you'd bought this top, this scarf would or would not have a color match to the top that you bought, for instance, 3 months ago. So what's the whole point here? I think what we're seeing is that the companies that have a very strong design component in their products or technologies are looking to create that experience in the form of stores. So if none of you have had a chance, I would encourage you, for instance, to go to the New York Apple Store. You may have been in an Apple Store in other parts, but you need to go to the New York Apple Store to really get this experience from an Apple. Flagship stores for major designers are becoming more and more common. The real question for a weak signal is do we think this will go mainstream? Who knows? But it's definitely a cool experience. Moving on to segment three, the killer question of the week. This week's killer question is tied to the discussion in segment one about timing and how do you find the elements that impact the timing for a new killer innovation or a new technology. So, to generate a list of ideas options that could identify the timing of a zero price element. So these are the commodity elements that potentially can be a predictor for a breakout new set of pricing on a new product, such as CCD elements leading to the explosion of digital cameras. So this week's killer question is, what would it take to make my product at half the cost? Or another way to word this is how can I reduce production cost by 50%? So the first question, what would it take to make my product at half the cost? Can be things like component elements such as CCD elements or Wi-Fi chips or something else. Or another way to word this is how can I reduce production cost by 50%? And this may be labor, this may be doing something completely different. So, what are some examples? Well, one is digital cameras. We've seen that with the CCD elements. Two is the dial-up ISPs. and the commodity or what would take to reduce the cost, one was the broadband. How could I take from having to charge my customers $24.95 a month down to $12.95 a month? Well, one is broadband. So you saw broadband have huge negative impact to AOL, CompuServe, which eventually got acquired by AOL, and pretty much a shift in all of the dial-up ISP operators. One example on how do I reduce production costs by 50% has really led to the whole issue of labor and outsourcing. So if you look at what your labor component costs are to deliver a certain capabilities, and you then look at can I transfer that to other parts of the world and therefore take 50% of my cost in production out, that's what really caused the tipping point in the whole discussion around outsourcing. So again, this week's killer question is, what would it take to make my product at half the cost? Or another way to word this is, how can I reduce production cost by 50%? With that, thanks for listening. Hoping the audio quality on this is okay, given that I could not bring my entire recording set with me that I normally have because I'm packing ultra light, given the number of cities that I have to visit over the next week while I'm here in Europe. So I've gone back down to a skinnier version of the recording setup. So hopefully the audio quality is okay this week. Please keep the feedback coming. Email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. Leave me a voicemail feedback at 703-636-4460 or Skype me at phil_mckinney. Also, remember to vote on Podcast Alley. Voting on Podcast Alley is the easiest way for you to say thanks for all the production work that goes into all of your favorite podcasts. And as a reminder, at the end, I'll be playing a voicemail feedback message from the listener in South Africa. So please remember your homework. Send me your audio comment on innovation and weak signals unique to your part of the world, and send me the MP3 or call the voicemail feedback line and leave it there. Thanks for listening. Get subscribed at killerinnovations.com or by visiting Apple iTunes. Get others to subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Phil, it's Eric Vigis here from South Africa. All of your innovation podcasts are very inspiring. Somehow you never seem to mention Africa, and in South Africa we have very many innovations, in particular in banking and financial services. In the medical field, as you probably know, the first heart transplant was done here, and South Africa still holds many worldwide patents in the medical field, as well as other things such as pool cleaning equipment and security. With the crime rate in South Africa, we've done a lot to reduce the crime rate and also to improve home security, vehicle security, and commercial security. When you mention BRIC, you don't mention Africa as a source of weak signals, and I think we've got lots of unique things to offer, and I wondered if you had any comments about that. Love the show. Keep broadcasting. Catch you later.